Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. A dozen airlines bankrupt, fuel costs still double what they were 18 months ago, and this week, the industry's weakest operators stop pretending they can survive it.
We've got the OEM side finally moving in the right direction. Boeing's fourth MAX production line went live this week. But the commercial carrier landscape is being carved up in real time. We'll get into what that bifurcation means for investors.
Plus, Delta dropped earnings, FedEx moved nearly $2 billion of debt off its books, and Defense Aviation just had one of its biggest contract weeks of the year. A lot to unpack.
Let's get into it.
This week's narrative was a fuel shock-driven shakeout that is increasingly separating the well-capitalized, structurally advantaged players from everyone else. And for the first time, we're seeing that separation show up not just in sentiment, but in hard capital allocation decisions.
Right. And what's important is the word shakeout here isn't metaphorical anymore. We're past the warning signs. We've got a dozen airline bankruptcies since January. Carriers grounded in Argentina. A Finnish charter operator shutting down after 45 years. This is structural thinning.
Operationally, what this means is that surviving airlines are flying into a progressively less competitive environment. Fewer seats competing on the same routes, pricing power consolidating upward. The operators left standing are going to see yield benefits that outlast the fuel shock itself.
And the fleet side reinforces that. Deliveries from the big manufacturers are still constrained. Especially wide bodies. So even airlines with capital can't just add capacity to chase that pricing power. Supply stays tight.
For investors, this is the key framing. The companies that can access capital markets right now are demonstrating survivor status in real time. FedEx tendering nearly $2 billion of debt isn't just treasury management. It's a signal of balance sheet confidence at exactly the moment weaker operators are failing.
That's the tell. The divergence in capital market access between strong and weak names this week was as sharp as I've seen it in this cycle. Worth spending real time on.
The most important signal this week came from the OEM production recovery. Specifically, Boeing activating its fourth 737 MAX production line in Everett on July 6th.
And I want to be careful how we frame this, because Boeing is one company. The sector-level signal is actually bigger than any single production milestone. What this week showed is that OEME output is building momentum at the exact moment commercial demand is consolidating into fewer, stronger hands.
Exactly. Operationally, the combination of Boeing targeting 42 aircraft per month now, with a path toward 52, Airbus posting 89 deliveries in June, and Embraer delivering 65 aircraft in Q2, its best second quarter in 16 years, tells you the supply chain is healing faster than the airline customer base is recovering.
Which creates an interesting dynamic. The airlines that survive this shakeout are going to step into a world where OEM delivery slots are actually available again, but at a moment when their competitive set is thinner. That's a powerful setup if you're one of the survivors.
For investors, the OEM recovery signal matters because it resets the timeline on fleet expansion optionality. Airlines and lessors that locked in delivery positions when slots were scarce are now sitting on genuine strategic assets.
Let's talk about how the market priced all of this, because the score this week was ugly, almost across the board.
Broadly ugly. We can start with the headline numbers and then get to what actually matters behind them.
The airlines got hit hard. United down nearly 5%. Delta down almost the same. Southwest, JetBlue, American, all off between 4 and 5%. The majors moved almost in lockstep.
And the common pressure behind that coordinated move was Delta's earnings release landing into an already fuel-anxious market. The Q2 results came out Thursday, and they recalibrated expectations for the whole group, not just Delta specifically.
Delta's down almost 5% on the week. That's a significant move for a name that had been holding up better than peers going into earnings.
We'll dig into the specifics in a moment, but the important thing is that whatever Delta disclosed about the cost environment and the filing covers Q2 results, it set the tone for how the market is reading the entire carrier universe right now.
The eVTOL names got absolutely crushed. One name down more than 13% on the week, another down nearly 12%. Those aren't earnings-driven moves. There's no new fundamental catalyst disclosed in the filings we have.
The specific catalyst isn't clear from this week's disclosures. What I'd note is that the eVTOL sector is heavily sentiment-driven, and in a week where fuel shock headlines dominate, risk appetite for pre-revenue aviation names compresses fast.
The defense side actually held up better in relative terms, though better is doing some work there. The primes were off 1.5% to 3.5%. Not immune, but meaningfully less bad than commercial.
And that relative resilience matters because we had genuinely significant defense contract news this week. Lockheed winning a contract worth roughly $500 million for Apache targeting system support. L3Harris landing a similar-sized indefinite delivery contract for missile defense sensors. Combined, that's nearly $1 billion in new defense aviation work just this week.
So the defense primes are absorbing real contract wins and still selling off, which tells you the broader market headwind is overpowering the fundamental story at the moment.
What matters is not whether every defense name was down this week, it's that defense is decoupling from commercial in terms of earnings visibility and forward demand. The sell-off is sentiment-driven, not fundamentals-driven for that subsector.
The cargo operators were the standout exception. UPS up about 2%, FedEx up 1.5%. In a week, where almost everything else in aviation was red, that's notable.
And it's not just performance, it's the FedEx debt tender that explains the divergence. We'll get into the mechanics of that, but the short version is they completed a nearly $2 billion debt repurchase this week, which is a statement about liquidity confidence.
The aerostructures and components names, Howmet, Hexcel, Heico, were all off 2 to 4%, tied to the broader sentiment, but they don't have direct fuel exposure, so this is more sympathy selling than fundamental pressure.
Howmet specifically had an interesting filing this week that we'll come back to. A director made an open market purchase at around 270, which is a modest but directional data point in an otherwise negative week.
Let me throw out the TSA numbers, because this is actually an important counter signal. TSA screened 13.6 million passengers this week, up 1.3% year over year, and 3.4% above the 3-year average.
That is not the number you'd expect if you were reading the airline stock performance as a demand signal. Travel demand is holding. What the stocks are pricing is cost structure and margin risk, not a collapse in people wanting to fly.
Which creates an interesting tension. The top line is intact. The problem is what it costs to serve that demand. Fuel is still historically elevated, even after retreating from April peaks. We're still well above pre-conflict levels. And that's where the margin compression is showing up.
Exactly. 13.6 million passengers through security is not a distressed travel environment. But if fuel is eating 2/3 of the revenue gain from higher fares, the equity story looks very different than the demand story.
The MRO names also took a hit. One name down more than 11% on the week. That's a steep move, and the specific catalyst isn't disclosed in this week's filings, so we won't speculate. But it's worth flagging as a significant outlier.
And Frontier, the ultra-low-cost carrier, was down more than 11% as well, right in line with the rest of the ULCC space. What's notable there is they filed an 8K this week, disclosing a binding aircraft sale agreement, which is a fleet right-sizing move that confirms the pressure the category is under.
We'll dig into that filing. But the overall picture from price action is clear. Commercial aviation repriced lower on fuel anxiety and Delta's earnings read through. Defense held relatively well on contract momentum. And cargo was the only category that finished genuinely green.
And that divergence, cargo and defense up while commercial is down, is exactly the structural separation we've been talking about. It's not random. It reflects which parts of this industry have pricing power and balance sheet access right now.
That's the setup. Let's get into the signals.
The first supporting signal this week is Delta's earnings release, and I want to be precise about what we actually know versus what the market is inferring, because those two things are not the same right now.
Right. So what we have from the filing itself is an 8K disclosing Q2 2026 results with the full detail in an exhibit. The market moved on whatever was in that press release, and Delta finished the week down nearly 5%. But the directional red is clear. The cost environment spooked investors more than the revenue environment reassured them.
And that asymmetry is the signal. TSA data tells us demand is up 1.3% year over year. Passengers are moving through checkpoints at levels 3.4% above the 3-year average. So Delta isn't losing customers. What the market heard in that earnings release was margin compression. Fuel costs eating into yields that should, in a normal environment, be quite strong.
I'd push back slightly on framing this entirely as a Delta-specific story. The market used Delta as a permission slip to reprice the entire sector. United down 4.9%, Southwest down 4.7%, JetBlue down nearly 5%. These names moved in a band tight enough that no individual company's fundamentals explain it. Delta's filing was the catalyst, but the sell-off was sector-wide.
That's fair. And that's actually the more important signal for investors. Delta's earnings function as a real-time cost accounting for the whole industry. When the largest, most operationally sophisticated carrier in the domestic market signals that the fuel burden is compressing margins, even at strong load factors, every other carrier gets repriced on the same logic.
The one name I'd separate from that read through is Southwest, because their structural situation is different. They've been managing a capacity discipline program, and they have a hedging framework that doesn't look like United's or Delta's. They were still down 4.7, but investors lumping them in with the network carriers on the fuel narrative may be imprecise.
Possibly, but the market isn't wrong to apply pressure broadly when the cost shock is as systemic as this one. We're still, by most estimates, 50% above pre-conflict fuel prices. Even a carrier with meaningful hedges is absorbing real pain at that level, just absorbing it more slowly.
Here's what I keep coming back to with the Delta number. The stock was at 91.68 at the start of the week and closed at 87.39. That's a nearly $900 million swing in market cap in 5 trading days on an airline with genuinely strong route positioning and a loyalty program that generates billions in ancillary revenue. That's not a company in trouble. That's a market recalibrating what strong is worth in a high fuel environment.
Which is why the TSA demand data is so important as a counterweight. If passenger volume were falling, this would be a straightforward demand destruction story. It isn't. 13.6 million passengers this week. The structural demand is intact. What's being debated is whether any carrier can translate that demand into equity value when fuel is where it is.
And my answer to that is yes, but only for the carriers with the cost and revenue architecture to survive a prolonged period of elevated fuel. Delta, United, they have loyalty economics and premium cabin pricing that insulates them more than the headline stock moves suggest. JetBlue at 576, Frontier at 694, those are different conversations entirely.
Frontier actually connects directly to the second supporting signal we need to work through, because the fleet rightsizing move they disclosed this week is a concrete illustration of how carriers in the lower tier of this bifurcation are adapting, or trying to.
The Frontier 8K is genuinely interesting because it converts what was a non-binding May agreement into binding terms. They're selling 11 A321neo aircraft to Avalon, 3 deliveries in Q4 of this year, 8 in the first half of 2027, and the explicit language in the filing ties this to a fleet rightsizing strategy aimed at increasing airline productivity.
Let's unpack what that actually means. Frontier is taking aircraft they had ordered, selling them at delivery directly to a lessor, and reducing their own fleet footprint. They are not growing. They are contracting deliberately in order to survive.
And I think survive is the right word, not optimize. Frontier's stock was down 11% on the week. The filing didn't cause that. The filing is actually evidence of management taking action. but the market is reading the action as confirmation of how bad the underlying situation is.
Right. The disclosure validates the stress rather than relieving it. You don't sell 11 aircraft you had on order because business is great. You do it because you need the liquidity and you need the cost structure to fit a smaller, tighter operational footprint.
What I find analytically useful about this filing is the Avalon counterparty. Avalon absorbs these aircraft and presumably releases them to carriers with stronger balance sheets or holds them against future demand. The lessor ecosystem is actively redistributing capacity away from stressed operators toward better capitalized ones.
Which is exactly the mechanism through which the shakeout translates into competitive advantage for survivors. It's not just that weak carriers are disappearing, it's that their assets are flowing at current market pricing to operators who can actually use them productively.
AerCap was down 2.3% on the week, which I think is a misread. Lessors are intermediaries in a reallocation cycle right now, and their long-term positioning improves every time a frontier-type transaction happens at market rates with a creditworthy counterparty.
The broader point from both Frontier and Delta is that the bifurcation we identified as the week's primary signal isn't abstract. It's showing up in binding legal agreements and quarterly income statements simultaneously. The weak operators are converting their optionality into cash just to stay alive. The strong operators are reporting earnings that disappoint on margins, but confirm that they're generating billions in revenue into strong demand. Those are two very different problems to have.
And the FedEx debt tender sits in an entirely different category from both of them. $1.67 billion in principal tendered. That's not a carrier managing crisis. That's a cargo operator with enough balance sheet confidence to proactively restructure long-dated obligations at favorable terms.
The FedEx filing covers six tranches, with the 4.5% notes due 2065 getting the highest acceptance priority. That's 40-year paper. The fact that FedEx is tendering against ultra-long-dated debt tells you they believe their cost of capital today is a better deal than locking in those obligations. That's a bullish balance sheet signal, not a defensive one.
And it explains the cargo divergence in price action this week. UPS up 2.2, FedEx up 1.5, in a week where almost every other aviation-adjacent name was red. Cargo has fuel exposure too, but it has pricing mechanisms and contractual structures that commercial aviation mostly doesn't. Surcharges, fuel escalators, contract repricing. The cargo operators are not absorbing fuel costs the same way a Southwest or a JetBlue is.
The takeaway from both supporting signals is the same theme reframed. Capital markets are discriminating sharply right now between operators who are using this environment to strengthen their balance sheets and operators who are using it just to stay in the game. FedEx and the FedEx filing are in the first category. Frontier and the Avalon agreement are in the second. Delta is somewhere in between. Strong demand franchise, real near-term margin pressure, and a market that hasn't yet decided which story dominates.
And for investors, that uncertainty around Delta, not the resolution, but the uncertainty itself, is probably the most actionable takeaway from this week's filings. The demand is there. The cost structure is the variable. Watch what Delta says about forward fuel assumptions, because that's the number that will resolve the debate.
So, let's talk about what this week's price action actually tells us about sector positioning, because I think the divergence here is more meaningful than a simple risk-off read.
Agreed. You've got cargo finishing green, defense finishing relatively flat in the context of what was a broadly negative week, and commercial aviation getting repriced 4 to 5% lower in five trading days. Is this cyclical positioning or structural differentiation?
I come down firmly on structural. The cargo names aren't outperforming because investors think fuel is about to get cheaper. They're outperforming because the market is finally pricing in that cargo has contractual fuel pass-through mechanisms that commercial aviation simply doesn't have. That's a permanent architectural difference, not a rotation trade.
I'd push back on firmly. Some of this is absolutely cyclical. The defense names sold off 2 to 3.5%, even with nearly $1 billion in new contract awards this week. If this were purely structural differentiation, defense should have held flat or moved higher on that contract news. The fact that it didn't tells me there's a macro risk-off component pulling everything down simultaneously.
Fair point on defense, but I'd separate the L3Harris and Lockheed moves from the Kratos move. Kratos was down almost 10% on the week, and you had an insider selling 4,000 shares under a 10b5-1 plan. That's a pre-scheduled sale, not a distress signal, but the market doesn't always make that distinction cleanly.
The Kratos move is worth holding separately. 10% on a defense name in a week where you have genuine contract momentum in the broader sector, that's either idiosyncratic or it's the market flagging something about smaller defense names that hasn't fully surfaced yet. I don't want to overread one insider's pre-planned sale as a fundamental signal.
Agreed, don't overread it. But contrast that insider transaction with what happened at Homet. A director made an open market purchase of 134 shares at $270.41 on July 2nd. That's roughly $36,000 of his own money going into HWM stock when the broader tape was weakening. Those two insider data points point in opposite directions within the same defense-adjacent universe.
And Helmut finished the week at $270.85, so the director is essentially flat on that purchase. But the signal isn't about the return on that specific transaction. It's about what a board member does with his own capital when everyone else is selling. That's a confidence signal.
The EV/TOL picture is the starkest illustration of structural pressure. Joby down 13.5%, Archer down nearly 12%, and there's no earnings catalyst, no operational setback disclosed this week. Paul Sciarra's RSU grant at Joby vested immediately. His beneficial ownership is around 55.9 million shares. And that filing tells you nothing negative about the company. This is pure sentiment compression in a pre-revenue category during a week dominated by fuel shock headlines.
Which raises the question of whether EVTOL has actually decoupled from commercial aviation sentiment or whether it's still being priced as if it's in the same risk bucket. Because structurally, Joby's cost model in a mature operating environment has nothing to do with Jet A fuel prices. The market isn't making that distinction right now.
It isn't, and that creates either a buying opportunity or a value trap depending on your view of the certification timeline. The RTX RSU grant to Philip Jasper, 20,860 units vesting in 2029, tells you that senior RTX leadership is still being compensated as if the company has a clear 3-year runway. That's a quieter but more grounded confidence signal than anything in the EVTOL space right now.
Bottom line on the divergence. Cargo and defense have structural insulation that the market is beginning to price correctly. Commercial aviation is caught between genuinely strong demand, 13.6 million passengers this week, up 1.3% year over year, and a cost structure that is being stress tested in real time. So the base case is a sustained bifurcation where cargo and defense maintain relative outperformance through year end. But the key risk is that a sustained fuel pullback compresses that divergence faster than current positioning expects, forcing a re-rating of the commercial carriers back toward fair value.
So with that framework established, let me walk through the four things we're watching next week, because each one is a direct test of something we've said today.
Let's hear them.
Watch Delta's forward fuel guidance and Q3 cost outlook, because it will confirm or contradict the thesis that strong demand carriers can protect margins even at historically elevated fuel prices, and that answer reprices the entire major airline group, not just DAL.
That's the one I'm most focused on. If Delta signals that fuel assumptions are stabilizing and their premium cabin yield is holding, this week's 5% move looks like an overreaction. If they signal continued margin compression into Q3, it validates the sell-off and probably extends it.
Watch Frontier's next capacity disclosure or any follow-on fleet transaction filings, because it will confirm or contradict whether the ULCC sector is executing an orderly right-sizing or beginning an uncontrolled contraction that could cascade into route abandonment and further asset sales at distressed terms.
11 aircraft sold to Avalon is a data point. The next filing tells us whether it's a one-time adjustment or the first in a series. Watch. The FedEx tender offer settlement confirmation and any updated capital allocation guidance, because it will confirm or contradict whether the cargo sector's balance sheet strength is durable enough to sustain outperformance as the broader aviation credit environment tightens.
They tendered $1.67 billion in principal this week. Settlement mechanics and any commentary on remaining debt targets next week will tell us whether this is a complete repositioning or the first tranche of something larger. And watch. Any new Boeing production data or delivery confirmation from the fourth MAX line in Everett, because it will confirm or contradict the narrative that the OEM recovery is accelerating in a way that actually changes the timeline for lessor and airline fleet planning.
That fourth production line went active July 6th. The first aircraft off that line and the delivery confirmation against the 42 per month target is the number that either validates the recovery timeline or reveals that the line activation was symbolic rather than operationally material in the near term.
Four very different tests of the same underlying thesis, that this industry is bifurcating structurally, not just repricing cyclically.
And whichever way those four data points resolve, they'll tell us more about the next 6 months than anything that happened in price action this week.
So let's close with what we actually know, because this week had a lot of noise. And I want to be precise about the signal.
Go ahead.
The week of July 5th through 12th, 2026, was defined by a fuel shock-driven shakeout, accelerating the separation between capitally resilient operators and structurally vulnerable ones, with cargo and defense demonstrating real insulation through contractual architecture and government demand, while commercial aviation repriced on margin anxiety, even as passenger volumes held at 13.6 million, 3.4% above the three-year average. For investors, the implication is that sector selection matters more than broad aviation exposure right now, and the insider transaction data, from Howmet's board purchase to RTX's executive RSU grants to Frontier's binding aircraft sale, consistently points toward the same conclusion the price action does. Capital is moving toward durability and away from leverage.
What I'd add is the timing asymmetry. The demand signal and the cost signal are pointing in opposite directions simultaneously, and the resolution of that tension, likely through Q3 guidance from the major carriers, is the single most important near-term catalyst for how this sector trades into the fall.
And if we're wrong about structural differentiation, if this turns out to be a cyclical rotation that unwinds when fuel retreats, the recovery trade is in the commercial carriers, not the names that held up this week. That's the hedge on everything we've said today.
That's Aviation Intelligence Weekly. Thanks for listening.
We'll be back next week with the data that matters.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. All data referenced is sourced from publicly available SEC filings, TSA checkpoint statistics, and reported market prices. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Consult a qualified financial professional before making any investment decisions.
Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. Want the inside track on aviation's biggest players? Aviation Intelligence Weekly brings you expert analysis of airline earnings, breaking industry news, and deep dive company histories. From American Airlines to Boeing, we cover the business of flight every week. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.